Get ready for all the craziness of small business. It's exactly that craziness that makes it exciting and totally unbelievable. Small Business Radio is now on the air with your host, Barry Moltz.
Well, thanks for joining me for the Streets Radio Show. Remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now incredibly show number 502. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the answer to all your communication solutions in the cloud. It's also provided by Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. Well, coming up on today's show, we're going to talk about how to beat your competitors, or as my guest says, eat their lunch. But my first guest, I want to talk about how entrepreneurs really become legendary. And if you ask the entrepreneur, they'll say, sure, I want to become legendary, but so many strive for it, yet so few achieve it. Here to help is Christopher Lockhead. He's the number one best-selling Amazon author and top 50 Apple podcaster. He's been called one of the best minds in marketing by the Marketing Journal, a human exclamation point by Fast Company, a quasar by NBA legend Bill Walton, and off-putting some by The Economist. Christopher is a former three-time Silicon Valley public company CMO, entrepreneur, and co-author of the book called Niche Down. Christopher, welcome to the show.
Barry, thank you so much. It's a joy to be with you.
So I got to say, I love your bio where you say you have a PhD from the School of Hard Knocks. You drank a lot of whiskey. You experienced the bliss of winning, the pain of failing, and most importantly, how to laugh about the whole thing. And I think that's the key.
You got to have a sense of humor, don't you?
If you don't laugh, you'll end up crying in this world, right?
You got two choices. You're either a legend or a loser, or a laugher or a crier.
Well, so before we talk about legend losers, there's two more things in your bios. What do you love about the Ramones?
They just changed everything for me. The first Ramones record I ever heard, I thought, holy cow, that is the most loud, obnoxious, fun, silly, great sounding music I ever heard, and I've loved it ever since.
And why was George Carlin right?
I think George Carlin was right about everything, pretty much. I mean, he had the courage to lay it down. He was the king of politically incorrectness, and we've, entered a world. Everybody is mamby-pamby. Nobody's tough. Nobody's direct. Nobody's straight. And, George Carlin was the last great comedic warrior.
Well, you're straight in your podcast, Legends and Losers, because those are pretty polar opposite things. Why'd you call that? Because those are pretty strong words.
Yeah, it's a pretty simple idea, which is the truth is losers make the best legends. All of us have moments of giant losses in our lives, and we all learn more by losing than we do by winning. And yet when you hear successful people in public talk about their lives or their work, all you ever hear is the good stuff, not the reality of what it takes to really design a legendary business and a legendary life. And so I just believe legend and loser are two sides of the same coin, and we should talk about both.
And it's really it's interesting because obviously sometimes people, Christopher, make the story up later on to say how successful they were. But why do you think losers make the best legends? Don't you think that losers either get laughed at or get forgotten?
Well, see, that's the whole thing, right? There's a fine line between loser and legend, and almost every great success is a loser until finally something clicks and they become a legend. And so in many ways, I think it's time to start celebrating the fact that many of the most successful people in the world are misfits. Many of the most successful people in the world don't fit in. As a matter of fact, what makes them successful is they stand out. A great example recently is people have been super critical of Elon Musk going on Joe Rogan, drinking scotch and smoking pot.
Right. I saw that on your Facebook page.
It's just ridiculous to me because he's an outlier's outlier. He wants to put us on the moon and he wants to dig holes under L.A. And so if you're going to be somebody who's an outlier's outlier, people shouldn't be surprised when he does outlier things. That's kind of point A. Point B, we sort of live in a world of business BS and of Kardashian butt selfies and clickbait. And frankly, I think it's very refreshing when a chief executive of a publicly traded company is willing to let their hair down, talk about how they really feel, smoke some pot, drink some scotch, and get into a real meaningful conversation. And frankly, I think more should do that.
But I think that's really great for those losers to become legends. But what happens for most people when they just stay losers?
Well, you know, sometimes when you bang your head against the same wall for a long time, you need to get a different wall.
Right.
But, you know, the truth is you can still win it in the late innings. I mean, we had legendary entrepreneur John McDonald on our podcast recently. He's the founder of Semi Handmade, and they're an Inc. 500 company, and they build custom front-end cabinetry for IKEA, if you will, back-ends, and they created a whole new niche doing that. And they're an incredibly successful company. John's an amazingly inspiring guy. And one of the most interesting things about him is he told me that he was, quote unquote, the angriest waiter in Hollywood in his late 30s. And that his life finally began when he gave up on his dream of being an actor and figured out a way to carve out a whole new niche for himself in this cabinetry world. And so, you know, my point is sometimes it's the losing that leads us to the insight, that leads us to the idea that opens up a whole new thing in our life. And I think we all have to be open to that. And we have to tell the truth about it, just like John does.
But don't you think that sometimes losing is just losing? I mean, one of the things that I always gripe about is that a lot of times people go, all right, I just lost. Now I got to sit in this place and I got to figure out why I lost and what really happened. And I think that you figure that out for maybe 24 hours. But then the most important thing, Christopher, is to let go and move on so you give another chance of success.
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's been said before that success is about going from one loss to another without losing enthusiasm. And the truth is, we're all going to lose. We're all going to fail. And that's how we learn. Failing by is the definition of learning. And the question is not what happens when we fail at something, but what we do about it, how we go forward.
So who in your mind do you hold up there really as one of the best business legends?
Oh, wow. Well, there's so many. I'll give you one of my favorites right now that maybe most people don't know about. It's a father and son team. Mark is the dad. John's the son. Their last name is Cronin. And they are the co-founders of John's Crazy Socks. And they're a classic example of a company that niched down. John, the son, was always a very creative guy. He's a young guy. Always into drawing and loved bright colors and so forth and so on, and developed an affinity for crazy socks. And they saw an opening for a new niche, and they launched an online business about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And they've become incredibly successful, so much so that former President George H.W. Bush wore John's crazy socks to his wife's funeral. And the thing that I didn't say is that John, the son, has Down syndrome. And there are many people who might view Down syndrome as a negative. They've decided to use, if you will, John's different, the thing that makes him unique, as an asset. And so he's the leader of the company. He's the face of the company. He's the creative sort of genius behind the company. And then his dad is kind of the business guy making it happen. And the reason I say it's one of the greatest entrepreneurial stories of our time is a lot of people would focus on the downside, the negativity of, if you want to think about it, John's different. But instead, John and his dad are using his different to their advantage, both in life and in business. And as a result, have created an amazing company. They give part of their profits to charity. They inspire a lot of people. And John and Mark are two of the greatest entrepreneurs I know.
I mean, I love that you mentioned someone as legendary, someone that we've never, ever heard of. But people are afraid, I think, to be different. How do you get the courage actually to do that?
Well, the big aha is when you study the most legendary people, companies, and brands, what you realize is they all have some very similar traits. They are unique. They are they break or take new ground. They purposely stand out, and they are purposely different. And so I think one of the stupidest pieces of advice, Barry, today in business is follow your passion. That's
right.
Dumb advice.
Right, exactly.
The right advice is follow your different. You know, John McDonald had a passion for acting. Well, so did 10 billion other people in Hollywood. He found a place where he could apply his creativity, if you will, follow his different and create a whole new niche. That's what John and Mark did. That's what Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx, did. That's what Debbie Sterling, the creator of Goldieblocks, did in the creation of STEM toys for girls. And so the most legendary people summon the courage to be different.
I love this idea, and I love the title of the new book, Niche Down, How to Become Legendary by Being Different, because a lot of small business owners, their tendency is to try to be everything to everybody because they just want to get some business, they just want to be busy. And in my view, that's the exact opposite of what you have to do.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Frankly, it's a lot more important to be clear about who your business is not for than who your business is for. And, you know, great businesses are somewhat polarizing. You either love them or you hate them. And you attract people or you don't, and you stand out for something that is very unique. And it's a lot more than just branding. It's about being known for a niche that you can own.
So talk about Nike, because recently they, of course, came out with that ad with Kaepernick. You know, it's been very controversial because of all the things the president said. What do you think? Do you think that follows their brand, that particular ad in that campaign?
So we can talk about it on two dimensions, if you like, my personal belief about what they did and it from just a pure business and marketing point of view. But from a pure business and marketing point of view, absolute genius. Legendary brands take a stand. Legendary brands are provocative and thoughtful. And look, they've got us talking about them. Their stock has hit a recent high. Their sales are up. And the reason is they have been a very thoughtful, and I'm going to use these words intentionally, Barry, developed a provocative point of view about something going on in our society today. And they've done it in a way that attracts the kind of fans and customers they want. And they're okay with upsetting people. And the reality is legendary companies, legendary people attract who they want to attract and they repel who they want to repel. And so it's pure business genius.
All right. And personally?
Personally, I believe in the First Amendment. I think we live in the United States of America. I think we get to say what we want to say. I don't think we get to be disrespectful about it, but I don't think kneeling during the national anthem is disrespectful. I think it's respectful. If you believe in the United States, then I think one of the things you have to believe in is our right to peacefully express our opinion. And in this case, about something that people think is really important. And, I think it's great. And I think the NBA has got this thing completely wrong. I think they're going to lose a lot of fans. The NFL. I think they're going to lose a lot of fans because of it. And the reality is my greatest sports hero, Muhammad Ali, is in a huge way my greatest sports hero because he took an unpopular stand about something that he cared deeply about. And we respect him for it. And so even if you don't think that kneeling is the right thing to do, for me, I think you got to support athletes in this case, but anybody who takes a stand for something they believe in and does it in a peaceful and, I believe, respectful way. It's not like Kaepernick is giving the finger or burning the flag or doing those kinds of things.
Yeah, and then we have a long history of that, as the famous viral video with Beto O'Rourke has, where, you know, this happened during the Civil Rights Movement, right? This is where people were doing peaceful sit-ins, so it's a similar kind of thing. So I couldn't agree with you more. The last part of the interview I want to talk to you about is your first book. It's called Play Big, Play Bigger, How Pirates, Dreamers, and Innovators Create and Dominate Markets. I think it's really interesting how you put the words pirates, dreamers, and innovators all in one line. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, if you think about the greatest, the people who have made the greatest difference in the world, in the case of my first book, of course, it's focused on entrepreneurs and primarily tech entrepreneurs. But I would go even more broadly than that. They had a different spirit about them. They were not doing something that was just incrementally better based on a prior paradigm. They were trying to do something that was exponentially different. And you have to be creative. You have to have a bit of a pirate in you if you're going to be a true innovator, if you're going to solve a big problem that matters and do it in an innovative way. You have to have a big dream, and it may sound corny to say that, but you have to have the swagger of a pirate and have a bit of a disrespect, if you will, for the current paradigm when you're trying to create the new paradigm. And you have to have the courage, per our discussion on Elon, you know, to be laughed at, because you're going to be innovating. And by definition, something innovative could be something really stupid. But the most innovative things look really stupid until they look really smart.
Right, exactly. So where do the pirates come in? Because I've watched Black Sails, right? Sometimes pirates aren't such nice people.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know that I'm necessarily advocating being a nasty pirate, but certainly being somebody with a vision for the future that is willing to topple the existing overlords in a given market category and introduce the world to somebody else. And, you know, Steve Jobs famously said, why join the Navy when you can be a pirate? And so, look, I don't mean any disrespect to the Navy. I love our military. But you know, it's a sort of a fun way to capture a joie de vivre and a carefree attitude about going for it and being willing to topple current ways of thinking around old ways of thinking.
Well, Christopher, I appreciate you being on the show. I'm a big fan of yours. Where can people get a copy of the book and also tune into Legends and Losers?
The best place to find me is at legendsandlosers.com, and you can find all about the podcast and the books and everything else from legendsandlosers.com.
All right, Christopher, thanks again. Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both the employee and the government insist that you get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government agencies on a regular basis, and if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. So this is one thing you gotta stop worrying about. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It's fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There is flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So go ahead, search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes or Google Play app stores to download this app, or visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Welcome back. Well, lots of people don't like competitors. I gotta say, I love competitors because it shows that there's a market for these customers. But how do you win clients from competitors? Here to help is Anthony Anarino. He's an international speaker and bestseller of two books, The Only Sales Guide You'll Ever Need and The Lost Art of Closing, Win the 10 Commitments That Drive Sales. He also writes a blog at www.thesalesblog.com, where he's published since 2010. He also has a podcast called The Arena that has ranked in the top 40 on iTunes. His third book is called Eat Their Lunch, Winning Customers Away from Your Competition, and that book will be released this week. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Barry. Good to hear from you.
So one of the things that you talk about is this idea of a red ocean strategy. Now, we've all talked about the blue ocean strategy. I'm trying to visualize, what's a red ocean strategy?
The red ocean, as you know from understanding the concept of the blue ocean, is that this is where all the sharks are, and the red ocean is just stained with blood because of the rough competition. And the thing about this, I think it's important for people to understand, is as much as we want to be the next Uber, or we want a product like Netflix or something that's totally disruptive and where we don't have any competition, we all work where there's competition, and winning means that I have to have a strategy to go into the red ocean and compete in a way that makes sure that the blood in the ocean isn't mine and that I'm taking clients away from my competition while I'm retaining my own clients. So this strategy and the book, Eat Their Lunch, is really about how do you create greater value? How do you differentiate your offerings so that you can survive and thrive in a red ocean?
You know, it's interesting. Back in the early 2000s, when I was an angel investor, I remember asking the person, well, you know, what's your sustainable competitive advantage? They said, well, I have no competition. And I'm thinking to myself, if you have no competition, you have no business. Do you think that competition is good?
Competition is great. And I think your intro is exactly right. One of the ways that you know that there's a market for something is that there's a lot of competition. And even when you do have compelling differentiation, You know, the interesting thing is that Apple just came out with their new iPhone XS Max, and Sony just
whatever it's called, right?
Right. It's the next one, and we're going to buy this one, and we're going to buy the next one after that. And at the same time, Samsung has built the market on Android with the Note 9, which is another giant phone, almost a tablet-sized phone. And the competition means that two groups of people are competing to create greater value. And when they compete to create greater value, there tends to be this upward spiral of things getting better. So every phone, and I have the old iPhone, the very first one from 2007 in a box, and when you look at it and it looks like a little brick, you're like, this is a terrible phone. But it only because we've had 10 iterations with Apple and Samsung, and I would say BlackBerry, but not so much anymore, competing to try to create something greater. So competition's good for you. It sharpens your edges. It means that you have to think really deeply about what you do to create value in a market. And it means that you have to go out and find a way to leapfrog a competitor by creating greater value. And everybody wins in this situation, even if somebody loses a client for a little while. They don't just sit and wait for you to take their accounts. They find a way to get better, and it moves everything forward.
So I love the idea that competition actually makes you better, because you see it in sports teams all the time, right? That if you play a better team, mostly that team will actually play better.
There's no doubt about it. And right now it's college football season. So this is the only sport outside of boxing that I watch. But when you see two evenly matched teams, there's so much drama. There's so much excitement about it. You don't want to see a great team play a terrible team because there's no drama. There's nothing happening. But I think business is the same kind of a sport. You know, we're out working, and it's interesting to watch what people do to get a competitive advantage. And it does sharpen things for people.
You know, it's interesting to me that you decided to write a book on competition where it seems like people are moving away from really sales to, I wouldn't even say a more consultative sale, more of a way where people are focusing on experiences and relationship with companies. Why is focusing on competition so important even now?
My opinion of this, Barry, is that I've watched salespeople and sales organizations stop thinking about competition. And what happens when you don't understand that this is a contest? And what we know from groups like CEB, who's now part of Gartner, is that when a client or your prospective client looks at buying something, they spend about 16 to 18% of their total time talking to salespeople. Normally, that's three groups of people. So you've got 5% of the time they spend buying something on average to convince them why you're the best partner, how you're different, why you're different, how it's going to make a difference for them, why they should prefer working with you instead of somebody else. And I think when you go into any kind of endeavor without real intentionality and you just punch the clock and you're like, okay, I know how to sell, so I don't need to plan a sales call. I don't need to think about this positioning. I'm going to go in and make the sales call I always make, and then I'm going to punch out at the end of that call. It's just not right, and it's competitive, and it matters what we do. It matters what we do to our clients. It matters what we do to our companies. It matters to the general economy that we go out and play our best game, because that is how things get better. And if you're in a role where you are a salesperson or you own or run a sales organization, you want to make a difference for people. And that means you have to compete in some way that gives you the advantage and you can make that difference. That's why you started the business in the first place.
I love the three words that you use, and I want to point them out to everyone listening, is you use the words partner, use the word different, and use prefer. And I love that because, again, we're not selling them stuff. We want to help them. We want to be partners with them. But at the same time, we've got to be different because, as Christopher talked about at the top of the hour, that's what people really want to buy. They want to be different. How are you going to stand out from your competition?
That's it. So when you think about what a salesperson does, I think a lot of times that we get trapped in this kind of process where, oh, I do discovery, so I'm supposed to ask open-ended questions. And I'm supposed to go in and introduce my company and share all these slides with them and so on and so forth. That's not what you really do. And I'll just tell you, basically, when it comes to competition, there's four levels of value that someone can create. You can create value by having a really good product. You can create value by having a really good experience and being easy to do business with. You can produce tangible results and some sort of ROI. Or you can produce strategic outcomes, which means what's most important to the company or the people that you're talking to. And what I recognize that salespeople do is they want to say, wait, to really go to that fourth level of value, I have to know a lot of things. And it means that I can't lean on my company by coming in and saying, Barry, let me tell you about our long history. Let me tell you about our global footprint. Let me tell you about all the solutions we have. Let me show you a list of all the logos that we've won. That's not how you compete. You compete by saying, we have better ideas. We have something that's so different and so compelling that it's going to produce a better outcome as it pertains to what's most important to you. That's really where all the action is that can you be the kind of person that can develop that differentiation to say, I prefer to work with them because they really understand what we're trying to do, where we're trying to go, and how do we get there?
And you talk about in the book that you really have to have a structure to prospecting, because I think for most people, it's a series of improvisations that they hope they never get to during a given day, because a lot of folks hate to do that. So what kind of cadence should you have for prospecting your competitors' clients?
Well, certainly what I say is going to be a lot more aggressive than what you just said. Like, hoping not to have to do it is, you know, there's this strange thing, Barry, that I know you're aware of. Reality is a very persistent hallucination. And even if you don't like prospecting, it always comes before opportunity creation and it always comes before winning deals. So you don't really have a choice. What I'll tell you is that the structure for prospecting needs to be a cadence, because what we're really trying to do when we go and we're competing and we're trying to take someone's customer away from them is we're trying to develop the relationships around, I have the insights, I have the ideas, I have the experience, I can tell you the trends that are going to impact your business, I can tell you how you should be thinking about them and how you should be positioning yourself to be able to exist and thrive and survive in your red ocean. But to do that, you're going to have to make phone calls, but not just phone calls now. You're going to have to connect with people on LinkedIn. You're going to have to share white papers. You're going to have to read about the things that impact their business, print a copy of it, highlight it, write your name on it, and say, this is the most important thing I want you to look at because this is what we care about right now, and here's why. And you have to have a cadence that says, I'm going to communicate with these people 5 times or 7 times over a quarter with real value. So they start to say, these people get us. They understand our challenge. I'm willing to have a meeting and engage with them. And I think where people have historically decided prospecting means I'm going to call you once in Q1, once in Q2, once in Q3, and once in Q4. And what you've done is told people, I'm not that serious about pursuing your business, and I really don't have anything to offer you anyway. So the cadence cures all that for you by giving you something to talk about with enough of a presence that people start to say, we should probably meet with these people.
And you're hoping that when you do call them in the first quarter and the second quarter, that their voicemail picks up, because you don't really want to talk to them, because as you said, you got nothing really to talk about.
That's it. And, you know, you're going to get voicemail. So you better have something to even leave on the voicemail that says, Barry, listen, I've been listening to your radio show. I think there's 3 or 4 trends that are coming that are probably going to be interesting for you to think about. And I know that you want advertisers, whatever. You have to have some sort of theory, or why are you on my phone?
So how do you motivate yourself to do prospecting? I remember for me when I was working for small companies, the way that I motivated myself was I had a picture of my family right in front of my phone. And then I knew that if I didn't pick up the phone, this was a long time ago, and the phone is the way we communicated. If I didn't pick up the phone, Anthony, I wasn't going to be able to pay my mortgage. So that was real motivation for me. How do you suggest people motivate themselves?
Starvation is a tremendous motivator, isn't it, Barry?
I always like to hire salespeople with big mortgages.
Exactly. There's no doubt. I will tell you, this is a different subject than prospecting, but it's really the root cause of a lot of the challenges that people have. They don't know what they want, and they haven't decided what they want for their life or for their children's life. They sort of just drift. And I think when you have a picture of your family and you have that focus in front of you, you know what you want. I want to take care of these people. I want to give them the best life possible. And so you pick up the phone and you dial the number. I'll tell you just a quick story. My mom raised 4 kids by herself, was petrified of cold calling, had never worked in that kind of a role before. But now she had 4 kids that she had to take care of. And she would go into work and dial at the time and weather. So it looked like she was actually doing the work. But at some point,
I used to dial fax machines.
Yeah, so you look busy. But at some point, it shifted for her. And she said, I have to make these calls because I have this family to take care of, same as you. And she ended up being exceptionally good at it and exceptionally good at relationships, and now has a $50 million business.
Wow.
That really was grown out of the need to be able to take care of her family by herself. So you do have to have something that you want. And if it's, well, you want to take care of your family, you want a big house. We like the big house thing a lot as sales leaders. But whatever it is, you have to know what you want and you have to do the work.
Wow. And so and the last question I want to ask you is, what kind of intangibles should we be looking at? What should people be focusing in on?
This is probably the most difficult thing for people right now to understand, because we've tried to make sales so much about the process that we forget that the customer is buying from an individual that they have to prefer. So there's two things you need to be a trusted advisor. You need trust and you need advice. Those are the two things. So trust is made up of what Charlie Green would tell you, credibility, reliability, and intimacy, divided by how self-oriented you are. So if you're other-oriented and you're credible and you're reliable, and your intimacy means you understand me and my business, then you get the trust. The big intangible for most people in sales now is that they don't have the advice part. So instead of leaning on your company or your products or your solutions, you have to lean on your credibility as a trusted advisor, which means I have the advice that you need. So if there's one place where sales organizations, sales leaders, entrepreneurs, and small businesses need to focus, is how do I help you get better results? And when you have that advice, that intangible starts to drive the preference up, and people say, these are smart people, I really want to work with them. They seem to know things.
You also used a very interesting word that I haven't really heard much when it comes to sales. You said use the word intimacy. And I think that's really important, because people really do want to have an intimate relationship with the folks they buy. They want it personal.
They want it personal. You need to know me. You need to understand me. And that's the part where we come in and say, let me tell you all about me. Let me tell you about my company. Well, they're worried about their company and their customers and clients and their products and their challenges. So the most interesting thing to them is the problems and challenges that they're working on. And intimacy is this concept of, I know so much about you. I understand this so well that you're going to trust me to help you with it. And without the intimacy, it's easy for customers, clients to prefer someone else who will spend the time to really get to know who they are and what they want.
Well, the Tella book is called Eat Their Lunch, Winning Customers Away from Your Competition. It's getting released this week. Where can people learn more about you?
TheSalesBlog.com. That's the best place to find me. And on iTunes, you can search for a podcast called In the Arena.
Anthony, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Barry.
This is AM 820. We'll be right back.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications. Get a copy of Barry's book, BAM, where he shows how social media and our self-service world have rewritten all of the rules of customer service. The best marketing now is BAM. Good customer service. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Maltz and get a free copy of the book, BAM.
Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both the employee and the government insist that you get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government agencies on a regular basis, and if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. So this is one thing you gotta stop worrying about. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It's fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There is flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So go ahead, search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes or Google Play app stores to download this app, or visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe more life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry, since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in, and existing customers are fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun, and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out barrymoltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series. That's Barry Moltz, MOLTZ.com/unstuck.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Perfection. Just saying that word runs chills up my spine. It's something I always strive for, but I feel I'll never achieve. Perfection for small business owners is actually a problem and can hurt your employees. Here to help is Petra Kolber. She's the author of a great new book called The Perfection Detox, Tame Your Inner Critic, Live Bravely, and Unleash Your Joy. Petra, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Welcome to the show. Well, I'm actually like a secret stalker. Whenever I feel sad or a little bit uncomfortable, I just go on Facebook and watch one of your videos.
You're so sweet.
It's really great. Talk about why you wrote this book. And a lot of people will think, well, perfection isn't bad. When someone, you know, pitches a no-hitter or they pitch a perfect game, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, a lot of times I say, Barry, you know, perfect is only a word until you attach an emotion to it. So for many of your listeners, perfection, it might not be a bad thing because, like you say, it might help them succeed and thrive and soar. But for many people that I work with, perfectionism actually separates them from their greatness. It actually moves them into a state of doubt, worry, and fear. And so from my own personal experience, what I found is the very thing I thought people wanted and expected was actually not, was limiting me in terms of my potential.
And so tell us about your life and how perfectionism, you know, hurt where you were trying to go.
Great question. I think, Barry, what happened is I started believing this idea that to be a fitness expert in my day, that I needed to know everything. I often say that you have this idea of your What is your And mine was I should be smarter because many coaches in my past told me that. So as I came up the ranks in the fitness world and suddenly I was being positioned as a fitness expert, my inner critic, my imposter syndrome elevated its head. And I actually began to turn down a lot of on-camera work for the fear that I wasn't going to be the perfect guest. No one ever asked me to be the perfect guest, but this false idea became my new truth and really limited me from, you know, putting my name out there in a big way for a couple of years.
You know, it's funny for me because I do radio stuff because I feel like I have a perfect face for radio. Right. And I look at all these great people that are so great. Like I was once on TV with Barbara Cochran, right, from Shark Tank. And after I got off this segment with her and we were being interviewed at the same time by Donnie Deutsch, she was so much better than me. She was so incredible. I'm saying I'm never going on television again.
And it's so funny that that's your own voice. And I guarantee you, Barry, that many of the people listening resonated, you know, very well with Barbara, of course, but also maybe other people resonated with you because you spoke their language. And I think what we tend to do, one of my favorite sayings is by the pastor Stephen Furtick, we're so busy, we struggle with insecurities because we're so busy comparing our behind the scenes to everyone else's highlight reel. So as you're watching Barbara just like soar and shine with Danny, I guarantee you, in some way, she was still looking at you going, oh, my God, his answer was better than mine. But again, we don't talk about this. And this is why I really wanted to write the book, because it really can separate us from doing magnificent work. And we can remember why we're here to be of service. Everyone has a unique point of view. And I think also, Barry, for many of us in the entrepreneurial space, we feel it has to be completely unique. It has to be never been done before. But the very thing that makes your work so unique is the magnificent you. And often the very part that we're trying to hide, for me, it was this idea of feeling flawed and I needed to be perfect, has now become my calling and my passion. And I guarantee for many of your listeners, they'll be going through the exact same process. Find your struggle, find the pain, put your unique spin on it. It doesn't have to be never been done before, because the thing that's going to make it so magnificent is your viewpoint on whatever it is that you want to share with the world.
You know, it's so funny because after that interview, Barbara said to me, well, that was different. And she really meant it as a compliment. And she's been, over the last 10 years, she's been nothing but supportive of things that I've been doing. So being different there really made her remember me versus all the other kind of people. So talk about the perfection detox. You've got this 21-step process. Seems like a lot of steps, Petra, to get out of perfection. Where do you start?
You start at the very beginning. The thing is, Barry, there's a lot of noise out there, which is fantastic. Let me reframe that. There's a lot of great encouragement out in the world saying, oh, just let go of being perfect. But to do this work, it takes work. So I wanted to, you know, ask a recovering perfectionist to get rid of perfection. I want to do it perfectly. So I wanted to give a methodology where it wouldn't interrupt your life. If we try and tackle the end game, it's going to feel very overwhelming. So I wanted to break it down into like 21 mini steps that you could do in 21 days, 21 weeks, in whatever time of frame works for you. And it comes down basically to three big chunks. Number one, we kind of have to clear out the clutter. And that's called, you know, basically taming your inner critic. We have to notice the noise. And what happens is, Barry, for many of us, this negative voice, which is part of the negativity bias, it has become so loud, yet so comfortable, we don't even realize it's there. We don't even realize these constant bargains we make with ourselves, these constant criticisms, these judgments that really do not serve us well, because our brain can't tell the difference between our false truth and what really we need to do in the world. So the first part is noticing the noise. You've got to clear out the clutter. You make room, but then we can't leave a vacuum, because the universe and your brain, if it's going to see a vacuum, it's going to fill it in again with more negative, because that's the bias. So then I take the work from positive psychology and we talk about living bravely. And that really is just feeding your heart, feeding your mind, feeding your life with all that is good about you versus all that we think needs to be fixed. And then with any practice, Barry, I want people to be able to close the book and use this as a resource and keep coming back to it over and over again. So then the last part is about unleashing your joy. Sustainable practices, that whether it's working with your own business, working with your own inner relationship, working with your family, these are actionable tools and strategies that have been proven to work that don't take up a lot of time, but they do need to become habits. Like with any new practice, we need to work the work, practice it daily, and then we get to live our true, authentic life and in a way that is also joyful, because we're all working so hard. So my idea is, you're going to work hard. You're going to take off this idea of perfectionism, which doesn't mean you're going to suddenly be sitting on the couch.
Right.
You know, that's a fear I hear a lot, Barry. It's like, oh my God, if I let go of perfectionism, that means I'm going to no longer be successful. What I often have found is people's idea of success, actually their mid-level of success. Because to be truly successful, you know this, especially as entrepreneurs and in small businesses, you got to be creative. You have to learn how to fail. You have to ask for help. And perfection doesn't allow for any of that exploratory learning to step into the equation. So I often think, you think you're successful now? Just wait. You're going to work just as hard, but you're also going to have some joy along the way.
And I think that's really important. About last year when I tested for my second degree black belt, and I've been doing Sato Karate for 15 years, and I was testing along, at the time I was 57 years old, and I was testing alongside, I'll say, kids who are 18 years old, and my instructor, my Shihan, said, I want you to go out and have your best test. She didn't say, I want you to beat everybody else. Have your personal best test. And for me, that's really what it was about.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, that, and I think that is the challenge, Barry, especially with social media, whatever business you're in. We tend to compare ourselves. And as we know, comparison is a thief of joy. But how can we become our own best friends, our own best coach, our own best mentor, our own best leader? So we are making friends with ourselves. And that way, look at what you're doing at 57. But if I was to say, you know, I'm kind of in a different way, Barry, at 55, I'm becoming a first-time author. I've been keynote speaking just for 2 years. It could be very easy for me. And I have to constantly remind myself that, you know, you recently pivoted into this brand new world. And if I compare myself to everything I see on social media, I would want to just put the cover over my head and go, why bother? But if we can like use others for motivation and inspiration, but only compare ourselves to our yesterday, that's when the great work and the magic and the hard work, but the joy can all step into the same arena.
You know, Petra, you bring up a great point about social media, because sometimes I go on social media, I want to, you know, I just want to take a break, whatever it is. It's not really, you know, part of my page. And then, of course, I see Mike Michalowicz. He's traveling all around Europe. He's got a major speaking gig in every single major European capital. And the mayor of Paris just gave him a key to the city. And it makes me feel like crap. So I get that. How do you... I guess, and I'm happy for Mike, but how do I go to social media with joy rather than with this inner critic?
That is such a great, you said a really key point about you kind of go on when you have some time to kill. Or so I think we have to go on. There's nothing wrong with social media. I heard Gary Vaynerchuk said something really great a couple of weeks ago. He said, technology doesn't have an opinion, because I was getting really judgy about social media. Social media has no opinion about how we use it. We have to notice, and my invitation to your listeners is when you get off social media, do you feel more joy or does you feel like the joy has been sucked out of you? The danger happens when we go onto our news feeds and our social media feeds to kill time. We're bored, we're feeling a little down. That's the worst place for our inner critic. And if I can go onto social media with attention and with a positive intention to only uplift others, and then maybe say, okay, I'm going to spend 5 minutes looking at my friends and my peers. And like you said, celebrate. I know you adore Mike. Celebrate his success and not compare whatever it is that we're doing. John Acuff said, don't compare your beginning with everyone else's middle. And again, my friend Dory Clark, Jenny Blake, they've been in this world for years. And you know, we're best friends. And I have to be very mindful, just like you, when I see Dory doing like 50 cities in 5 weeks going, oh, and I'm at home. And
right,
what
exactly
am I doing? So again, it's just recognize, you know, it's human nature. We are going to compare, but then we get to catch ourselves and go, oh, how interesting. And I like to use that phrase versus judging my thoughts as good or bad. Like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm comparing myself to Dory or Jenny. They go, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I am not doing the work that I could be doing to move my work forward. Or maybe I'm tired, or that's interesting that I feel this way when I'm looking at that. What it does, Barry, it takes off the self-judgment and it allows us to go, why am I feeling this way? Am I tired? Maybe I need to get off social media. Maybe now is not the best time, whatever it is. But the word interesting allows us to look at ourselves and the world that we want to impact in a positive way through curiosity versus judgment.
Now, here's the crazy side of it. There are some people right now that are going on your page, Petra, and saying, oh, my God, I can't believe Petra's doing that. I'm doing nothing. Right.
Yeah,
so it's all relative.
It's all relative. They knew that I'm sitting in my New York apartment in my closet.
In your closet. I know you're sitting in the closet. I always see you.
So, you know, it's all, you know, and that's the thing about, here's the thing, Barry, that I think we all need to remember. What social media does not do, it doesn't show the 10,000 hours. It doesn't show the hard work that, Barry, that you have put in to build your radio show, to build your speaking, to build your relationships. It doesn't show the 10,000 hours of research that I'm doing. So we tend to look at that highlight reel, that snapshot, And even those influencers that have a million followers, they didn't get a million followers overnight. It takes the work. It takes the hustle. So again, don't also, as you're looking at other people, we tend to forget all the hard work that we've done. So whatever your business right now, don't, I know we have to look forward to see where we still need to go and put action behind our dreams, but don't forget to take moments of time and pause and look back to see all the work that you're already doing. Appreciate that. Use that as your foundation. And then there's probably a lot more work that we all want to do, but it's from a place of self-acceptance versus beating ourselves up, because no one's going to beat yourself up more than you do.
I'm my biggest competitor. You know, it's really interesting. People always say to me, God, you know, how do you get like people like Dell and Square and Microsoft to sponsor your radio show? I'm saying, well, first thing you do is you do 300 radio shows where no one's listening, right? And then you start to get sponsors. They go, no, I want to skip the first 300 part. I just want to go right to the sponsors. I go, like, as you said, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. And I think that's the challenge in the world that we live in, because now everything is so instantaneous. And, you know, we also have shows like The Voice and, you know, American Idol and reality shows that shows this like 15 minutes to famous. But even there, we see a little bit of the backstory, but we forget those singers, those dancers, those actors, they start at the age of 2. So again, it's a human condition to compare. Just remember that the work, and even like all the people that we admire, they're on our radar because of the hard work that came before that. So we can't, I wish we, you know, there's the odd random light bulb person that you do get that ignition so fast, like it was the right timing, right person, right time, right. But that's not the norm. And if we go expecting that to be a part of our life, we're going to be constantly disappointed. And if that should happen for you, then be surprised and delighted that you are one of the lucky, the golden touch. But like, you know, like you said, Barry, is those 300 shows that when no one was listening, it was those Facebook Lives where you were basically talking to yourself.
Right, exactly.
It was the podcast that I recorded in my closet without, and I forgot to turn the microphone on the first time. So there's all these fails and these, the failures and the disasters that lead to these overnight, in air quotes, successes.
Well, Petra, I appreciate you being on the show. The title of the book is called The Perfection Detox, Tame Your Inner Critic, Live Bravely, Unleash Your Joy. So where can people get in touch with you and see you in your closet?
The best place is through my website, petrakolber.com, P-E-T-R-A-K-O-L-B-E-R.com. And you can find all about my Facebook podcast closet episodes and the book there. And on Twitter, social media, it's my name, Petra Kolber.
Petra, thanks so much. And thanks for all the great work that you're doing. And I want to thank all of you for joining us on this week's radio show. I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, the all-in-one communications platform, and Square Payroll, the easiest way to pay your team. You can go to www.square.com/go/SBR. I also want to thank our staff, especially our booking producer, Sarah Schaffern, our in-studio producer, Michael Leverett, our marketing manager, Courtney Gilchrist. And again, if you are serious about being more successful this year, you got to give me a call. I set up a private line for this. It's 773-837-8250, or you can email me at barry@moltz.com. Isn't this the year that you get your small business unstuck? Isn't this the year that you finally make the money you deserve? Remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry Moltz on the web at barrymoltz.com or more episodes of Small Business Radio at smallbizradioshow.com.